And today I don't have 3 main points. I'm deeply ashamed. And I didn't want it to be quite so obvious in the bulletin that I don't have those 3 main points. So I apologize in advance to those of you that it's going to rock your world. But I'm not going to tell you how many I have, and that way you won't be counting them down. All right, I appreciate that. We read in Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 through 20. Then Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you, and surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age." We all know this verse. Most of you can recite it without ever even reading it straight out of the Bible. And we call this the Great Commission. And this is what we take as Christians to be our mission here on this earth, is to go out and to seek and save the lost, all of creation. And that's a tall order. And sometimes we read that and we're like, that's just too much. I can't go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. And Christ realized that. But, you know, that's the mission of Christians as a whole. It doesn't mean each individual one of us has to go out and reach every single individual in the entire world. So, instead of looking at that as such a tall order and saying, I can't do that, that's not possible, so I'm just not going to do it at all, I was going to give you an alternative this morning and to sort of break it down. You know, we can't evangelize the whole world because we as an individual aren't going to see the entire world. But we can evangelize our little corner of it, the people that we do come in contact with. That is something that we can do. And there's a popular Christian mantra that you may have heard tossed around that is very meaningful in this area, and it's called "Each One, Reach One." So, what I'd like to challenge you is to maybe set that little bit more achievable goal. Just imagine just for a moment that our Christian mission had been a little bit different, and God had given us perhaps a different plan of salvation, and He said, in order to be saved, you've got to bring one person to Christ. So, you know, just imagine if that was our goal, how hard would we go out and work to try to get our own person? He might have even thrown a wrinkle into it and says, it can't be a family member. Oh, I got 3 kids, all right, I'm in there. You know, there's even one for me, one for the wife, and maybe a spare, just for good measure. That way I get an extra room in my mansion. But suppose that was our mission. We'd be very focused on that mission. So why would we be more focused on reaching one person then than we are now, when we have a lot bigger mission, and that's to reach the whole world? So, a lot of times we look around and we say, all right, well, who should we reach? And we just kind of assume everybody that we've come in contact with has already read the Bible and they've examined it and they've already made a decision. A lot of times we see some groups are Christians, some of the people that we know, and we say, all right, we don't have to worry about those. And there's this other group that we say, well, they're not Christians, and I'm sure they've already heard the message from somebody, and they've already rejected it. So who does that leave for me to reach? So what we generally refer to in literature is this group of people is called the unchurched. These are the people who don't currently go to church, maybe don't even have a lot of interest in going to church, but they're just kind of the people in the background that we see every day. And so it's helpful, if this is our target audience, is these people that are unchurched, the ones that we need to go and reach, if we know a little bit about who they are. So there's been some studies done to try to figure out who is this average unchurched person that maybe we come in contact with every day. Maybe it's our neighbor. Maybe it's a coworker. It may be a family member. It may be your cousin or or somebody that you don't see all that often, but you know that they're just not a church-going person. So there's been some studies that looked at it, and they said what they've discovered, the typical unchurched person, more likely to be male than female, for whatever reasons you want to assign to that, better educated than average, higher than average income, and a small amount of religious background of some type. So that's what we can kind of expect just of that average unchurched person. Somebody who perhaps when they were a child went to church a few times, had a little bit of religious education and background. But they've for whatever reason decided not to make church or being a Christian an important part of their life. And those are the people that it's our mission to go out and reach. So let's examine some of these people and who they are and how we could reach these people. First thing is they're likely to have rejected church, but not God. That may seem a little bit strange to some of us who kind of tie those two things together. But there are people out there that have had a bad experience with church or with Christians. And they've come to feel like, well, the church doesn't offer anything to me. Maybe they feel like the church is kind of an antiquated or an irrelevant institution these days. But surveys have also found that over 80% of Americans pray regularly. Even about 20% of atheists and agnostics pray regularly. That may surprise you a little bit. Although the surveys didn't exactly describe who they were praying to, so we don't know too much about that, but they do pray sometimes. A lot of them used to attend church, and they've decided not to. When asked why, and this is probably our most critical thing we're wondering, 91% said church wasn't sensitive to their needs. So, now, to begin with, this is a very self-centered type of attitude toward it, is church doesn't meet my needs. Church isn't supposed to be there to just meet your needs. It's an opportunity for us to worship God. But that aside, that's their feeling of why they're not here, because that's an important secondary thing that we do, is we do try to meet the needs of one another. So we can kind of take that as a challenge in and of itself, that that's the way that a lot of people feel. And we kind of assume a lot of times that these people, you know, they understand the message of the Bible and they've chosen to reject it. The truth is, on average, most people don't understand Christianity and they know almost nothing about the Bible. When you actually get to talking to that typical unchurched person, they don't know Moses from Paul. They don't know the Old Testament from the New Testament. And a lot of times we say, well, I don't really feel qualified to talk to people about the Bible. But, you know, compared to most of the people that you're trying to reach, you are an expert on the Bible. Just if you regularly come here, you can't come here that often and just know so little about the Bible that you're probably not better prepared than they are to talk about the Bible. What they found out is most Americans can't name the four Gospels. 60% don't know who delivered the Sermon on the Mount, and almost half don't know why Christians celebrate Easter. If that gives you a little bit of insight as to who these people are. And by the way, those statistics, that survey I was pulling from was over 20 years old. The numbers probably haven't gotten better since then. They've probably gotten worse. So, whenever you start a conversation, a lot of times, part of our thing is, we don't really, what do we go and just say to somebody? You know, you're just having a casual conversation and it's like, let me tell you about Jesus. And that just seems kind of awkward. And, you know, we really don't want to do that because that kind of turns people off. So what's a better approach to that? And my suggestion is if you want to have a conversation about spiritual matters, let the other person talk. Let them talk about their faith, about what they know, about what they think and what they believe. This will do several things. First off, this way they feel like it's their conversation. You're not trying to push your beliefs on them and you're not trying to beat them over the head with the Bible. You're finding out about them. That demonstrates that concern that you have for them, that you want to know what they think and what their ideas are. And part of what you're doing with that is you want to find out where they are spiritually. They may be a lot farther along than you think. They may have a lot more knowledge than you expected. They may have a lot of beliefs that are kind of out there. Some people have some very odd mixtures of beliefs from different denominations and from different groups, with a little bit of Hinduism thrown in and mysticism. And some people just have some very odd beliefs about their spiritual life. And so it's helpful to listen to them. Find out what you have in common, because that's where you have to start building. If you want to build a building, you start with a foundation. And if you want to talk to somebody about spiritual matters, you need to have a solid foundation that is areas that you both believe in. That way you can start where they are. That's what Paul did whenever he went to Athens. He started with the statue that they had to an unknown god. And he says, all right, we've got some common ground here. Let me tell you about this unknown god. And so even though their beliefs were very different than Christianity, he still found something that they had in common as a starting point that they could talk about. And that's what you find out if you let them talk instead of you talking. Because sometimes we just get this urgency of, I got things to tell you that you need to hear. And that's not usually an effective approach. The unchurched don't want to know what's true. They want to know what works. That sounds kind of odd. They want real world help with real world problems, and they want answers to questions, and they want immediate results. Because that's kind of the way our culture is these days. And so sometimes they want to know, okay, if I become a Christian, what's in it for me? What do I get out of it? And so sometimes we have to kind of explain, God is there and he does help us, but he's not a genie giving us three wishes or anything. That's not the way that Christianity works, and it's not the way that God works. Sometimes people, I said people want to know what works. And sometimes people think things are true because they work. If you order a crystal on the internet that you can put on your porch and it'll protect you from floods and tornadoes, and 20 years later you've never had a flood or a tornado, you say the crystal works. It's never happened. I've left it on my porch this whole time. It must be true. And a lot of times that's the way people think, is that because something works or appears to work, it's true. And the way that Christianity is it works because it's true. It's not true because it works. So if we can get people into that mindset that it's not like buying the crystal and it works because you don't have a disaster, that the Bible works and Christianity works because it is true and because it is different. God gives us directions, and being a Christian can help fix your life. But it's not a magic wand, and it's not a genie giving us wishes. And God's not going to immediately come in and fix all the problems that we create for ourselves by all of the bad decisions that we make. God doesn't always protect us from ourselves in that way. He gives us the freedom to make our own choices, and we're going to live with the consequences of those decisions that we make. But God can help guide us and help us to make better decisions, so that he's not just a big mean God waiting to swat us down when we make mistakes, and he doesn't give us arbitrary rules to make our lives miserable. God is trying to improve our lives by the rules that he gives us. And if we follow them, we find out we have a lot fewer problems in our lives, that all those rules are there for a reason. God's not trying to take away our fun by giving us a list of things we're not allowed to do. God's trying to tell us your life is going to be better off if you follow these rules, if you do these things, if you marry the person you're in love with and you have children within that loving, supporting relationship. It makes life a lot easier And that's what he's trying to do, is save us from making those bad decisions that can really make our lives stressful and make lives difficult for us. The same with spending our money. We make a lot of bad decisions when it comes to spending our money. And if we follow biblical principles, he says, I'll make your life a lot simpler and a lot easier. And you won't have all the financial problems that you have if you follow the way the world thinks of money. The unchurched don't want to be your project. They want to be your friend. If they see you as you're trying to evangelize them and convert them and get you into their religion that they may see as a cult, and once you get in, you're going to move on to the next person, that's not what they're looking for. They want you to be their friend. They want help with their problems. They're not looking to just be the notch in your belt here or your personal victory. They're looking for help with their lives. They want you to genuinely care about them and their problems. There's a saying that we often use in education, but it also applies when you're teaching the gospel, that somebody doesn't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So you can't just start off by saying, here, let me teach you all these things I know and you don't, unless you first make that relationship with them. And if you can get the relationship with them and they know how much you care about them, then they'll understand and be more receptive whenever you say, you know, I have some information here that can be of help to you in living your life. One thing that we discover, too, is that the unchurched want their children to have moral and spiritual guidance. A lot of times whenever people become adults and they move out of their house and they're not made to get up and go to church anymore, tend to kind of fall away for a time. And sometimes that happens until they have children. And then when they have children, they start thinking about the spiritual and moral upbringing of their children. And so that's a good way to have an effect on people. And to share the gospel is to provide that avenue for them to have their children learn what's right and what's wrong. People want their children to have some protection from all of the bad things that can happen to them in life. And a lot of times they know that comes from having a belief system and knowing right from wrong and having that internal self-discipline to say, no, I'm not going to make that decision, not just because it could get me in trouble or because my parents would get mad, but because it's just not the right thing to do. That has a lot more effect on a child's behavior. And that's the kind of effect you want them to have, is that self-discipline, where children know right from wrong, and that when they do make a mistake, that their conscience bothers them, and they maybe won't make that same mistake again. So when you do find that unchurched person that you think that you can reach, then what are they going to say when you start approaching them about Christianity? And it's going to fall into probably one of three main camps. The first one that you're going to hit is, I can't believe. And you may wonder what that means, I can't believe. But sometimes people have stumbling blocks in their way. And sometimes it's kind of nice early on in your discussion to find out, what is it that keeps you from being a Christian? Or you mentioned earlier that you used to go to church and now you don't. And whatever it is, whatever that reason is probably their big thing that's blocking their way of why they can't believe. Sometimes they have this sense of, well, educated people shouldn't believe the Bible. You know, science has already proven that religion isn't true, and it's just something that weak people use to lean on and things like that. And so, you know, maybe that's kind of what they have in their head. But it may be something different. It may be, why do I struggle and my children suffer whenever I see other people that are prospering, when other people don't have these same problems? Why would God let that happen and give my child a disability or a handicap of some type? You know, why would God inflict that on somebody? So I just can't believe in God because of that. Or it may be that they say, I can't accept something on faith. You know, I need some evidence. I need some facts. They may say, I prayed, but God didn't answer my prayer. They might say, why did God allow me to suffer as a child? You know, I had some type of abuse when I was growing up, and a good God wouldn't let that happen. So I can't go back to church. I can't believe in Him because of it. So your first step is finding out what is that thing that's standing between them and being a Christian. And once you find that out, then you know where to work from. And that's kind of helpful to be able to deal with them. Otherwise, you may wonder, why am I not making any progress here? They seem to be agreeing with what I say, and yet they still have no interest in being a Christian. So it's helpful sometimes to get that out of the way right up front and find out what is it that's between you and being a Christian. And then help them find the answer. But don't just give them the answer. You know, it's easy for you to give a one-line platitude that's supposed to help them whenever they have something that they're deeply struggling with. And that's not going to convince them. You're going to have to lead them and guide them and help them find the answer. If the answer is in the Bible, it may take some Bible study, but it may take them reading on their own, maybe some assigned reading if they're willing to do that, or to say, I think there may be some verses here that may help talk to your problem on here. And it may lie outside just simple Bible study. It may involve some therapy on their own. It may involve just some heartfelt discussion with you or with somebody else, with a counselor. But if you help them to get through that problem, then I think you will have somebody who's a little more receptive to receiving the message. The next thing that you may find is, instead of just, I can't believe, is, I don't want to believe. And sometimes you find this because if I believe, I'm going to have to alter my lifestyle. Sometimes they know enough about religion to realize that how they're living isn't compatible with being a Christian, and that would require change, and they don't want to change. And so that's a little bit harder to overcome when somebody says, you know, well, yeah, I agree with what the Bible says, but I just don't have any interest in being a Christian at this time. And sometimes it's because what they're really saying is, I'm living with somebody, and I know that I can't do that as a Christian. Right now I'm taking money under the table, and I can't do that as a Christian. You know, I'm cheating on my taxes, and I can't do that as a Christian. You know, whatever it is, there's maybe something in their life that they don't want to give up, and they're not ready to give up. So probably the best path on this is to let them talk through that. What's the logical consequences of what you're doing? You know, if the answer is that they're having an affair with somebody else, and they know they can't do that as a Christian, what can you expect to be the logical consequence of what you're doing that's not compatible with the Christian life? You know, if you're having an affair, your spouse is probably going to find out eventually. How's that going to go for you? How's that going to result? If you're cheating on your taxes, if you're taking money under the table, you're living with somebody, what's going to be the long-term effect of this, and is this going to be a positive thing for your life? Because it's probably not. And hopefully you can help them see that and realize that drugs and alcohol and crime and unhealthy relationships, they don't make life fun and exciting. They might add drama to it, but it's usually not a positive thing. Help them to see that that's really in the long-term self-destructive behavior. And once they see that that's really not helping their life, it's a whole lot easier for them to be able to realize they're better off giving that up. And that God's rules are there to help them and not to hurt them, not to take away their fun. The next thing is, after I can't believe and I don't want to believe, is I don't know what to believe. Because there's a lot of that out there. There are so many different interpretations of the Bible. And there's so many different people all saying different things to them that it's a little bit hard to know, and it may not just be Christian denominations. There are a lot of people that are drawn to Eastern types of backgrounds and mystical things and different cults, and they don't know what to believe. I mean, some of you grew up in the church, and some of you didn't. And if you didn't grow up in the church, you can see there's a bewildering array of different belief systems out there. And it's a little hard to figure out what you believe. Everybody that you listen to sounds like they know what they're talking about and sound like they have all the answers. And then you talk to the next person and they say something completely different and they sound just as convincing and they have all the answers. So once again, you have to find out that common ground. If they believe in the Bible, you've got something to study with them. And you can help them sort out what's true and what's not if they believe the Bible. If they don't believe the Bible, you got to work from whatever starting point they are. You may have to talk about the reliability of the Bible. If you say, I really don't know how to do that, guess what? That's what Google's for. Sometimes you have to become an expert on a topic so you can teach somebody else. And so there are plenty of reference materials to help you if you're not an expert on what that person wants to talk about. So if you're not an expert, become an expert, and it'll help you too. You'll learn far more than they will whenever you prepare to teach them about something. So find out a little bit. If they're not convinced the Bible's reliable, do some research. Find out whether or not the Bible's reliable. It'll help your faith too, not just theirs. But the Bible can be intimidating. When they first look at this big book that's as big as a Harry Potter novel, it's intimidating. I have to read all that. And then when they start reading, you know, they start reading in Genesis, and, you know, you read for days and days and days, and you're only up to Abraham, and you still got all of these pages to go. You know, they expect it to read like a novel. And then as you start going through the Old Testament and it jumps back and forth, and I thought they already got to the Promised Land and now I'm reading this other book and now they're back on their wandering in the wilderness, it's confusing. And so people need a little bit of guidance and structure to the Bible. And if you explain to them how it's structured, once again, if you don't know, this is a good opportunity for you to learn something. You know, find out a little bit more about how the Bible is structured. And that way you can explain to them the difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament. And why were they told back then, there's a commandment that says if you find mildew in your house, go out and burn it. You know, explain to them, you know, those things that aren't required anymore. When they start reading and find out they've got to sacrifice a lamb, you might have to do some explaining as to why they really don't have to go buy a sheep and kill it anymore. And it gives you an opportunity to discuss with them the way that the Bible is laid out and what's important and where it is that they need to study at any given time. So you got all those three different types of people that don't believe that you may encounter on here. But then there is a fourth one that you may encounter of, I do believe. Isn't that enough? You know, I believe. I believe that God exists. I believe that Jesus was the Son of God. Why do I have to go to church? Isn't that enough? And that's the other thing that you may get to. And they may not understand that it's not just an intellectual exercise. That, you know, Jesus said that saying, Lord, Lord, isn't enough to get you saved. That this isn't something that just has to be in your head. There has to be that connection between your head and your heart. And so that may be what you have to talk about. It's easy, even if you do go to church, to play church. You come here and you dress the way you're supposed to and you say all the right things and you sing all of the right songs. You hear all the sermons and you serve on committees and you help plan events and you teach classes. And yet, sometimes the message never gets to your heart. It's easy to just play church, and you've got the outward face, and you're pretending to be the Christian, but deep down, you really know you're not there. That it doesn't mean anything to you. You're doing it because that's what's expected of you. especially when you grew up in the church and you've heard all this all your life, and so I know God's going to strike me dead if I don't go to church, so I'll go, and you know, I'll do all these things. But it's got to make it to your heart. It's got to affect how you live your life and why you make the choices that you make. John 1:12 says, "To all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God." Not to already be children of God, but those people that received him who believed, he gave the right to become children of God. That's just step one. So it has to go farther than that. We don't stop with belief. That's the starting point with our Christian journey. Some people say, well, I need to get my life together before I become a Christian. I've got things that I need to change about my life, and then I'll become a Christian. You know, God will help you get your life together. It's a lot easier to do that as a Christian. God doesn't expect you to be perfect. He doesn't expect you to have made all of the changes you need to make. You don't have to have already stopped, you know, using some profanity from time to time to become a Christian and get some help in working on the problems that you have. But some people use it as an excuse. When I finally get my life together, then I'll become a Christian. And they kind of have that backwards. As long as they've gotten to the point where they understand that they're making mistakes, that they're doing things that are wrong, that they're ready to repent and change their lives, then they're ready to go ahead and make the commitment. And we're all still works in progress. You've seen the T-shirts that says, "Be patient with me, God isn't finished with me yet." And I think we could all wear those. So let them know, you know, I'm not perfect. I'm just a Christian. I'm just forgiven is the other one. That's the only difference between me and you. Still make mistakes, still sin. It's just that I'm now on God's side here, and he's willing to forgive me as long as I'm trying to work on the problem. So in the scripture reading that we heard earlier today, it said Jesus came to seek and save the lost. And that's what he's asking of you. He's asking you to go out and seek and save the lost. There are people out there who need him. And there are people out there that you may be the only one that can reach them. You may have the relationship with them. It may be that you're the one that they respect, that they know, that they trust. That first step is that they know that you care. And if you're already there, you're through the hardest part. So we don't need to worry about the whole world all at one time. Let's just narrow it down. Remember that each one reach one. Once you've reached the one, that doesn't mean you can retire. You still keep trying, but you also don't, once you get the person in the door, you're not done with them. You need to remember they really want a friend, not a project, that you don't just move on. You keep that relationship with them and keep them strong so that they don't start coming here and then fall away. So don't take on the whole challenge of all creation. Just take on that challenge of there's a person that I know that needs Jesus. And so let me at least make the effort for that one person. So reach your one, and then if that goes well, or if it doesn't, then try to reach the next one. But just one at a time. We've got an opportunity this morning. If you realize you've been playing church, if you realize you haven't really taken the message to heart, you've got an opportunity to make a change to that. And you can come forward and you can receive the prayers of the church to try to help you along that path. If you would like to speak a little more privately, Ted has volunteered to be in the back during these worship services so that if you don't want to tell the entire church what's going on, you can still have a private prayer to help with that. But also, if you realize you've never made that commitment, if you're one of those unchurched, even if you've been attending, but still in your heart you've been unchurched, you've got an opportunity to change that today too. You've got a chance to become that child of God and to have a saved condition rather than a lost condition. So you've got an opportunity to come forward and to repent of your sins, to confess them, and to realize that you need to make some changes in your life to be the kind of Christian that you should be. So whatever your need is, I encourage you to come forward while we stand and sing the song.